Newsletter number 5. A day late, but never short. It was all good about a month ago. So if you've been with us since day one, you know I've been pretty transparent about my journey through motherhood. But being this open and this vulnerable doesn't come without its price or without its challenges. If I'm being honest, every time I hit send, my stomach turns a little. I know there's a piece of me that I'll never get back, a piece that you all, my village, gets to keep. You get to do whatever you want with it. My only hope is that in whatever capacity you know me, you respect this as a place of vulnerability and thoughts. When I first set out to send these newsletters, my goals were simple and clear. I wanted a place where I could update everyone who wanted to know what was happening all at once. I also wanted to cultivate a sense of inclusion among my supporters. My dad says, the more people involved in a child's life, the better off the child. I believe that to be true. Somehow, though, with each letter, I find myself opening up more and more, whether I want to or not. It feels almost like if I want to tell the truth, then I have to be open about my life and not just Maddie's. I struggle with it, though. Do I keep it cute and surface? Do I send you adorable pics of Maddie and tell you all is well? Or do I tell you just how challenging but rewarding, sacrificial and selfless being a new mom really is? There's always questions that need to be answered. Life does not give you a shortage of questions, ever. So see below for my thoughts on the questions the outside world projects onto you, the ways in which I'm questioning myself, and a bit of advice on going back to work. Easter Sunday and sacrifices. I woke up on Easter Sunday with the chills. No, not because I was so moved by thinking of the ultimate sacrifice. His life for ours. He dies so we can live. No, my chills were a consequence of a burgeoning fever. My arms were so weak and heavy, I could barely hold my 16-pound son. This is it, I thought. I have COVID-19. I immediately called my mom. I think I have it. I feel sick. It hurts to move. I need sleep. Can you come pick up Maddie? Around 30 minutes later, my mom texts me she's outside. I quickly and sort of absent-minded threw a few diapers, a pack of wipes, a onesie, a bottle, and his formula into his diaper bag. Weakly, handed it off to my mom and went back to cuddle up in bed. It was the first time all week, maybe even longer, I can't remember, that I got to sleep. Pure, uninterrupted sleep. It was life. A few hours later, I wake up to a call from my mom. I had already missed 2. He's breaking out. He has hives all over. I don't know what to do, she said, panicked and exasperated, with my son screaming hysterically in the background. I popped up. The formula, I thought. He's allergic to the formula. About 2 weeks before this, we were having family game night. Now, if you know me, you know game night is anything but games. I come to win. I get really into it. So my stepmom decided, which was the right thing to do, to hold my son. When it was time to eat, instead of interrupting me to breastfeed him, she made him a bottle with the new formula we had just bought. Formula I insisted we buy in case I came down with COVID-19 and became unable to breastfeed. Formula that my dad very bitterly points out is $40 a can. So I end up losing a Monopoly. Yes, they were cheating. And I go to grab my son. I notice that he is as red as a witch's apple, and very quickly his body is being covered with hive-like bumps. I freak the fuck out. Dad, what is this? Oh my God, he's having an allergic reaction. Help me! I scream at my dad. He was just too calm for me. We gave him a steroid and it immediately reversed the reaction, but I was scarred. How quickly it could all go wrong was scary for me. Maddie had been drinking that formula here and there since he was born. In fact, it's the formula the NICU fed him. I couldn't understand how and why now he was having an allergic reaction. My stepmom brought up the idea that perhaps it was the Bath and Body Works fragrances she was wearing, and that made sense. But still, I should have been more careful with giving him that formula ever again. By the time the day comes where I wake up and self-diagnose myself with the Rona, I had not been taking care of myself. I was so afraid of hearing Mahdi cry, of feeling like I was doing something wrong, I opted to holding him all day, even when he was asleep. When I could sneak away for a shower, I did, but I would make it so quick in fear that he would wake up and see me not there and feel abandoned. When I got out of the shower, I would quickly moisturize, if at all. I stopped any sort of skincare routine. I wasn't sleeping. I was eating junk all day because the thought of trying to cook gave me anxiety. I stopped going out for walks because I was not sure if he had allergies, which was triggering his probable asthma. He's literally allergic to everything. It got to a point where I was locked off in my room, afraid to do anything but sit there and hold and play with my son. And the only time I could get a few minutes of alone time was in the wee hours of the morning when he was asleep. This means I wasn't sleeping. I had to get medicine for my stomach because my bowels were off. I was dehydrated. Mahdi was taken care of, but I wasn't taking care of myself. Everyone talks about sacrifice. Having children means sacrifice. My life for his. But how long was this life sustainable? How long until I began to resent it? How long until I made a wrong decision? 2 weeks, it turns out. I didn't have the Rona. Perhaps I had an infection. I had so many health problems, my dad was laughing at how many issues I was having. And you know what? It caught up to me. I should have known better than to send my son out with that formula, knowing the possibilities. I did not even think enough to at least send him the steroid just in case he had the reaction again. Even if I wasn't sure the formula had caused it in the first place. But because I had neglected so much of myself, I was suffering. And because I was suffering, I couldn't make clear-minded decisions on behalf of Mahdi, which in return caused him to suffer. We were two suffering fools that day. The first lesson in all of this was simple. I need to make taking care of myself a number one priority. This is non-negotiable. I can't lead our family if I can't get out of bed. I was so worried about being a bad mother by putting myself first. But honestly, there is a time and place where I would be a bad mother to not put myself and my health on the top of my list. Now, that first lesson dawned on me pretty quickly. But underneath that lesson lied a real truth, one that isn't so easy to accept. What would have happened if I was actually sick and in New York with no one to help me? FAQs, dreams and sacrifices / nightmares. I just don't understand what's in New York. Why would you choose to live in the most expensive city? My dad questioned me, honestly confused. Because I'm following my dreams, I screamed back. The words, though, made me feel immature when they left my mouth. Immature and incomplete. I went back to my room and did some more self-interrogation. What does New York have to do with my dreams? What progress was I making towards my dreams? What are my dreams? An easier question for me, I guess, a good place to start is, what do I not dream of? In fact, it seems like the more I think about it, the more I uncover a major theme in my life. I am always very keenly aware of what I do not want, who I do not like, where I do not want to be, that I almost never stop and paint the picture of the affirmative. I knew I wanted to not be in Sacramento. I knew I didn't want the quiet and settled life. I wanted exciting and adventure and money and to be helpful to the world and to my people. I wanted to show my family the world. I knew I wanted to make different decisions than the ones I saw growing up. But what do I do with that? How do I build a life out of don't wants and general desires? It seems like the chip I've always carried has only multiplied inside of me. I have manifested all the non-desires of my heart. What if, just what if, by trying my hardest not to be something, I've only multiplied it within me? What if I haven't been leaving enough space for what life can look like? Have I been listening to what God said about me? Still yet, God has been so good to me. She's put me in places I could only dream of. She's shown me the light of life, the light within myself. Sometimes, though, I get distracted and I start to chase ego. One thing about the pandemic is it slowed life down and showed us just how out of control we all are. When we let go of our illusions of control, we open ourselves to God's unique blessings for our paths. So now, in a situation, where I recognize I have absolutely no control of the full outcome, I ask myself, what's in New York? Is it God or is it ego? I think what's challenging for me is I can't articulate the specifics. I know one thing is true. I love the company I work for. Well, if I'm going to have to work for someone anywhere, this is a good place to work. But I do ask, is it forever? Is the company enough to stay in the city I feel like I'm constantly dividing myself for? A city I'm constantly willing and dealing to make a way? Am I risking my son's safety for my life in New York just to say I did it, to say I made it? I want abundance. Do I have that in New York? Am I working towards that in New York? I have more questions than answers right now. Toni Morrison's The Work You Do, The Person You Are. Before I had Madi, I was determined to make a name for myself at work. I was determined to get really good at my job, land a higher paying job, and hopefully get closer to making the kind of impact I want to have in the world. I wanted this so bad, in fact, I sort of put my pregnancy to the back burner of my head and pushed myself to be consequential. It worked. I had a good professional year last year, but at what cost? I felt so consumed with work. I took it home with me. Sometimes the actual work, but more often than not, the politics of it all. How can I shine? What can I do better? Obsessing over my mistakes. Being suspicious. The pressure of knowing I would soon be a breadwinner consumed me. As I'm writing this, I just completed my second week back to work after 16 weeks away. Those 16 weeks both flew by and strolled along. It put into perspective that winning isn't and cannot be number one in my life. Family is, and I can't kill myself striving for perfection. I have to just do the very best I can. It's all I can do, and once that's done, I gotta get back to what matters, and that's family. As we are all shifting into this work-from-home season, where there's even more pressure to perform because of the shadow of recession, where the urge to try even harder to prove that you can be counted on, even when life is challenging us right now and screaming for us to heal, I look to the legends to give us guidance, so I want to share it with you. I got these four tidbits of advice from the late and great Toni Morrison's article, The Work You Do, The Person You Are. And it goes like this. Number one, whatever the work is, do it well. Not for the boss, but for yourself. Two, you make the job. It doesn't make you. Three, your real life is with us, your family. And four, you are not the work you do. You are the person you are. Thank you so much for reading. You can support this newsletter by Venmo or Zelle to my phone number at 916-893-0631.